Behind us, they were putting Linda in a body bag, sealing her in. I heard men count to three and lift her, put her into a gurney of some kind and wheel her out. One of the forensics guys told Murphy they were going to take a break and would be back in 10 minutes. She nodded and sent them out. The room got even more quiet. "Well, Harry," she said. Her voice was hushed, like she didn't want to disturb the apartment's new stillness. "What can you tell me?" There was a subtle weight to the question. She might as well have asked me what I wasn't telling her. That's what she meant. She took her hand out of her jacket pocket and handed me a plastic bag. I took it. Inside was my business card, the one I'd given to Linda. It was still curled a little where I'd palmed it. It was also speckled with what I presumed was Linda's blood. I looked at the part of the bag where you write the case number and the identification of the piece of evidence. It was blank. It wasn't on the records. It wasn't official. Yet. Murphy was waiting for my answer. She wanted me to tell her something. I just wasn't sure if she was waiting for me to tell her that a lot of people have my card, that I didn't know how it had gotten there, or if she wanted me to say how I had known the victim, how I had been involved with her. Then she would have had to ask questions, the kind of questions you ask suspects. "If I tell you," I said, "that I was having a psychic premonition, would you take me seriously?" "What kind of premonition?" she said. She didn't look up at me. "I sense," I paused, thinking of my words. I wanted them to be very clear. "I sense that this woman will have a police record, probably for possession of narcotics and solicitation. I sense that she used to work for the Velvet Room for Madame Bianca. I sense that she used to be close friends and lovers with Jennifer Stanton. I sense that if she had been approached yesterday and asked about those deaths, she would have claimed to know nothing." Murphy mulled over my words for a moment. "You know, Dresden," she said, her voice was tight, cool, furious, "if you had sensed these things yesterday, or maybe even this morning, it's possible that we could have talked to her. It's possible that we could have found out something from her. It's even possible." And she turned to me and slammed me against the doorway with one forearm and the weight of her body, suddenly and shockingly hard. "It's even possible," she snarled, "that she'd be alive." She stared up at my face, and she didn't look at all like a cutesy cheerleader now. She looked like a mother wolf standing over a body of one of her cubs and getting ready to make someone pay for it. This time, I was the one to look away. "A lot of people have my card," I said. "I put them all over. I don't know how she got it." "God damn it, Dresden," she said. She stepped back from me and walked away toward the blood-stained sheets. "You are holding out on me. I know you are. I can get a warrant for your arrest. I can have you brought in for questioning." She turned back to me. "Someone's killed 3 people already. It's my job to stop them. It's what I do." I didn't say anything. I could smell the soap and shampoo from Linda Randall's bath. "Don't make me choose, Harry." Her voice softened, if not her eyes or her face. "Please." I thought about it. I could bring everything to her. It's what she was asking. Not half the story, not part of the information. She wanted it all. She wanted all the pieces in front of her so she could puzzle them together and bring in the bad guys. She didn't want to work the puzzle knowing that I was keeping some of the pieces in my pocket. What could it hurt? Linda Randall had called me earlier that evening. She had planned on coming to me, to talk to me. She was going to give me some information, and someone had shut her up before she could. I saw 2 problems with telling Murphy that. 1, she would start thinking like a cop. It wouldn't be hard to find out that Linda wasn't exactly a high-fidelity piece of equipment, that she had numerous lovers on both sides of the fence. What if she and I were closer than I was admitting? What if I'd used magic to kill her lovers in a fit of jealous rage and then waited for another storm to kill her too? It sounded plausible, workable, a crime of passion. Murphy had to know that the DA would have a hell of a time proving magic as a murder weapon. But if it had been a gun instead, it would have flown. The 2nd problem, the one that worried me a lot more, was that there were already 3 people dead. If I hadn't gotten lucky and creative, there would have been 2 more dead people back at my apartment. I still didn't know who the bad guy was. Telling Murphy what little more I knew wouldn't give her any helpful information. It would only make her ask more questions, and she wanted answers. If the voice in the shadows knew that Murphy was heading the investigation to find him and was on the right track, he would have no qualms about killing her, too. There was nothing she could do to protect herself against it. She may have been formidable to your average criminal, but not all the Aikido in the world could do her any good against a demon. Then, too, there was the White Council. Men like Morgan and his superiors, secure in their own power, arrogant and considering themselves above authority of any laws but their own, wouldn't hesitate to remove one police lieutenant who had discovered the secret world of the White Council. I looked at the bloodstained sheets and thought of Linda's corpse. I thought of Murphy's office and what it would look like with her sprawled on the floor, her heart torn from her chest, or her throat torn out by some creeping thing from beyond. "Sorry, Murph," I said. My voice came out in a rasping whisper. "I wish I could help you. I don't know anything useful." I didn't try to look up at her, and I tried to hide that I was lying. I sensed, more than saw, the hardening around her eyes, the little lines of hurt and anger. I'm not sure if it was a tear that fell, or if she really just raised a hand to brush back some of her hair. Then she turned toward the front door and shouted, "Carmichael, get your ass in here." Carmichael looked equally as slobbish as he had a few days ago, as though the passage of time hadn't changed him. It certainly hadn't changed his jacket, or the food stains on his tie, or the particular pattern of rumple to his hair. There had to be something comforting, I reflected, in that kind of stability. No matter how bad things got, no matter how horrible or sickening the scene, you could always count on Carmichael to look like the same quality of crap. He glared at me as he came in. "Yeah." She tossed the plastic bag to him, and he caught it. "Mark that and log it," she said. "Hang around for a minute. I want a witness." Carmichael looked down at the bag and saw my card. His beady eyes widened. He looked back up at me, and I saw the shift in gears in his head, reclassifying me from annoying ally to suspect. "Mr. Dresden," Murphy said. She kept her tone frosty, polite. "There are some questions we'd like to ask you. Do you think you could come down to the station and make a statement?" Questions to be asked. The White Council would convene and execute me in little more than 30 hours. I didn't have time for questions. "I'm sorry, Lieutenant. I've got to comb my hair tonight." "Tomorrow morning, then?" she said. "We'll see," I said. "If you aren't there in the morning," Murphy said, "I'm going to ask for a warrant. We'll come and find you, and by God, Harry, I'll get some answers to this." "Suit yourself," I told her, and I started for the door. Carmichael took a step forward and stood in my way. I stopped and looked at him, and he kept his eyes focused on the center of my chest. "If I'm not under arrest," I told her, "then I presume I'm free to go." "Let him go, Ron," Murphy said. Her tone of voice was disgusted, but I could hear the hurt underneath it. "I'll talk to you again soon, Mr. Dresden." She stepped closer and said, in a perfectly even tone, "And if it turns out that you're the one behind all of this, rest assured, whatever you do, and whatever you can pull, I will find you, and I will bring you down. Do you understand me?" I did understand, really. I understood the pressure she was under, her frustration, her anger, and her determination to stop the killing from happening again. If I was some kind of hero from a romance novel, I would have said something brief and eloquent and heartrending, but I'm just me, so I said, "I do understand, Karen." Carmichael stepped out of my way, and I walked away from Murphy, who I couldn't talk to, and from Linda, who I couldn't protect. My head aching, weary to my bones, and feeling like a total piece of shit.